It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today on this lovely July 27th. It's a lovely day today. And we're going to talk about... a lot about animals today. So this show is, of course, called It's All About Food, and I like to touch on a variety of different subjects related to food, health, environment, and the treatment of animals. And one of the things that happens when we take for granted other species on this planet because we eat them and we consume them on a daily basis and don't think about their feelings, their lives, their pain, their suffering, we tend to do all kinds of other nasty things to them as well. And I think once we realize that we don't need to consume animals to live and to thrive, then that lifts the veil, and all those other things that we do in exploiting them becomes very apparent as exploitation and as very unnecessary. We're going to be talking to someone who's been doing a lot of work in the area of animal protection. Hope Bohannik is my guest today, and she has been active in animal protection and environmental activism for over 20 years. She's the grassroots campaigns director for the International Animal Protection Organization in Defense of Animals. And she was the Sonoma County coordinator for Proposition 2 in California. And soon after that victory, founded Farm Animal Protection Project. Hope offers an influential PowerPoint presentation called Eco Eating, a Cool Diet for a Hot Planet, that addresses the environmental impact of animal agriculture through peer-reviewed scientific research. She's a nationally recognized leader and speaker in the animal protection movement and a well-known presenter throughout the Bay Area and across the United States. Welcome, Hope. Thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food.
Thank you so much for having me.
We have a lot to talk about today. You are a very busy person.
Yes.
And you're doing so many important things. So I'm so happy to have you on because
Thank you.
I've never met you, but we've dialogued a bit over the years, and I've read some of the great articles you've written, and I'm just looking forward to this hour to talk and learn more about you.
Great.
So I was reading on, I think it was the Vegan Poet site, that you've been a vegan since 1990.
Yes, that's correct.
So how did that happen? When did you decide that eating animals and the exploitation of animals was not for you?
Yeah. Well, I first went vegetarian when I was 16, and that was just because I loved animals so much. And I recognized that I did not want to eat them.
Do you remember that moment when you recognized?
I do. My mother had cooked a chicken, and the chicken was whole. You know, it was a whole chicken on its side, and it was placed on the table. And I remember making the connection that this was a bird, an actual animal, and I think it being whole like that helped me, you know, make that connection. And I couldn't eat it. I started thinking about all the things in the refrigerator, that there was, you know, bacon, that was a pig, and I loved pigs. You know, I thought they were adorable.
Yeah.
And what on earth am I doing? And I just stopped eating animals. And I didn't. I lived in Dallas, Texas at the time. This was in the 80s. And didn't really even know what a vegetarian was.
Right.
It was very, very unknown, especially in the South. And I just it felt it in my heart, you know. So I started reading about it, learning more about it, and also learning that the dairy and egg industry are just as bad,
if not worse.
Right. So So I, about 4 years later, when I was 20, thought, okay, I've got to go for it and do this and go all the way and become vegan. And it's funny because at the time there was so little information and so little good science around the health aspect that I, you know, was told by everyone that I was going to be unhealthy and yeah. that I needed the animal products to be healthy. And I didn't care. At the time I was like, you know what, even if it's less healthy, I can't exploit animals. I just can't do it. And what I learned, though, is that my health improved, my acne improved, my you know, digestive issues improved, and suddenly I was living a much healthier life. And I thought, well, you know what, it's not bad for me at all. This is
That's
great.
That's right. And of course, as time went on, I know you learned that this was the right diet for so many things.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then, you know, I my first encounters with activism were in the environmental movement. I worked for Greenpeace as well as Earth First up in the Redwoods of Northern California. And I was one of the only vegans in the environmental movement that I met and talked to a lot of people about those connections. Because even back then, I mean, the EPA was doing, had scientific studies connecting the environmental impact of animal agriculture. Even back in the early 90s, we had the information. It's just now kind of coming out.
Can we talk about that a little more? That's always, what's the word I'm looking for? It's always amazed me in the environmental movement that so many people are not vegetarian.
And
even today, you know, I've connected with so many people at Greenpeace and other places. Okay, I think the Environmental Working Group just put out a statement about eating less meat, it's good for the environment, but none of them will take the plunge and say, come on, folks, this is the single most effective thing any one individual can do for the environment. They don't say it, not eating animals.
Yeah. It's a mystery to me. I don't know if it has to do with their, their fundraising and they've pulled it and it's not something that brings in the money. I don't know. It's frustrating because it is just a huge impact on the environment, animal agriculture. I mean, it's the number one reason for the Amazon rainforest being cut down. It is huge water pollution issue, water waste, and greenhouse gas emissions. I mean, now we're connecting it in a major way to greenhouse gas emissions. In fact, with a report out that found that 51% of greenhouse gas emissions are connected to animal agriculture.
Right, that was the World Watch article that came out a year
that's
or two
right.
ago.
And yeah, the authors of that are two prominent World Bank environmental advisors, and they urged in that report, you know, a global shift to a plant-based diet, and said that could actually do more to reduce greenhouse gas emissions than our current trajectory of, you know, switching from fossil fuels to renewables, because that switch with the energy use, that's really going to it's going to take massive infrastructure change, energy, time, money. But a global shift to a plant-based diet, it would be minimal impact. It just takes the knowledge, the impetus, and the will for people to do it.
And that's where I get back to my original question, and that's why is it that these environmental activists still today, they're doing all this research, they're finding out all of this information, and yet it's this incredible human characteristic to be in denial about certain things. And I know that they have to be aware of these things, and yet I've talked to many of them. I remember most recently talking to someone who has a good position at one of these environmental groups, and we were talking about dairy, and I was saying, you know, certainly you know it's not a healthy food. It's linked to so many health issues, and it's certainly not good for the environment. And the cows, those numbers you were just talking about recently about animal agriculture being a major cause of global warming, a big piece of that are the dairy cows are giving off methane gas. And she was just looking at me like a deer in headlights, like she wasn't even aware of any of this. And I just don't understand. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know if.
I mean, but you work with some of these people, and I imagine you must have had some conversations. But
absolutely, and it's similar things. Some of them are just unaware because it's just not in the environmental community's dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, but some are, and there are, I mean, just to give credit, there are vegetarians and vegans within the environmental movement, but they're just not the prominent voices, and it's definitely not the message that the environmental community is giving out. You know, I think food, there's kind of a primal thing around food.
Yeah.
And I think people get like, it's kind of, you know, like when there's some dogs that you take their food away, or a wild animal, you take their food away, and they're just, it's this primal reaction, this growling, and, you know, I think humans have that. And, and so it's not just the environmental community, it's, you know,
everyone.
A lot of community that's outside of animal rights that, you know, that has this, like, don't take my food away from me. It's like, okay, I'll buy less. I'll change my light bulbs. I'll do all that, but don't talk to me about my food.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right. I'll put those water reducing shower heads on.
Right. As long as I can still take a shower, but God forbid I can't have my hamburger, you know. So, but what they don't realize is that once you get into the vegan eating, it's just so abundant and so, you know,
liberating.
Nutritional and liberating and delicious. You know, and you find all those substitute things and things that, you know, that make your meals just as appealing and just as satisfying as they were before. So, you know, I think people are afraid that they're going to feel deprived.
Yeah.
But there's just so much amazing, you know, food out there now. I mean, when I went vegan back in the, you know, in 1990 and on through the 90s, I mean, you had to really want it. You had to really be dedicated.
Yeah, I did it in 1988. And I had been thinking about it for a while. It was bothering me because I was starting to read about what was going on in the dairy farms, something that people really don't want to know about or acknowledge because, as you mentioned before, dairy and eggs, those are the things that people think of last as
impactful and ethically or environmentally.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of vegetarians think, oh, I can have dairy and eggs because the animals aren't being killed, and they are being killed. Their lives are being shortened, and they're suffering the whole time. It's just really a horrific scenario.
Absolutely.
And I was taking a business trip to Israel. I was there for 3 months, and I just used that opportunity to eliminate dairy from my diet. I wasn't going to be eating with a lot of people, and they certainly have a lot of great vegetable dishes there. It was a good time to do it. But
but you know, like when we went vegan back in the day, I mean, you had to really want it. If you wanted a cookie, you had to bake it.
Right.
There was just nothing. What's that?
Which isn't a bad thing. I'm always encouraging people
not.
To get back into
absolutely.
The kitchen.
Oh, of course, of course. But my point is that now there's just no excuse. There is so much abundant vegan food. You go into any health food store and you can have everything from ice cream to sausage to, you know, it's amazing now.
Yeah.
So it's so much easier now, which is great. And I, of course, all these processed foods aren't the most healthy of the healthiest food for us. However, when you're transitioning, it's fun foods. You know, it's good things to have.
Yeah, definitely help.
That transition time. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's get to the serious stuff now. So you're working with In Defense of Animals. Can you give us a little history on this organization?
Sure. In Defense of Animals has been around for over 25 years. We started mostly focused on vivisection.
Yeah.
That was the main focus of our founder, Dr. Elliot Kass. And we started with vivisection, doing a lot of work in specifically California. That's where our world headquarters is now, here in San Rafael, Marin, and that's where I live and work in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And but we expanded out to really incorporate a lot of different animal issues as the time went on and as the organization grew. Anti-fur, talking about circuses, educating about veganism, of course, we've been talking about. And Dr. Katz was one of the first to really feel comfortable and want to use the term vegan when everyone was using vegetarian.
Mm.
That's really a wonderful thing that he was getting that going using the term vegan. And we work on numerous different issues. We also have sanctuaries and international projects going on. We have IDA Africa, which is a chimpanzee rescue from the bushmeat trade. There are 76 chimpanzees on a sanctuary at IDA Africa, that, you know, I would love to go there someday and really see it and experience what's going on there. And we have IDA India, which is a couple of rescue vehicles and a dedicated group of activists there that we support that go and spay and neuter and give medical care to the street animals of Mumbai.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, and then we have a shelter and rescue in Mississippi that is called Hope Animal Sanctuary. And
did they name that after you, Hope?
Of course. No. Hope gets around. But Doll Stanley runs that sanctuary, and she does an amazing job in Mississippi of going in and rescuing in hoarder cases and puppy mills. She is working really with the authorities there and getting these animals out of bad situations and into good homes. And we, you know, have numerous other campaigns, like our South Korean Dogs campaign. That Day of Action is coming up, our International Day of Action for South Korean dogs and cats that are killed for human consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And so
there's so many different issues.
It's, yeah, I mean, it kind of goes on and on. We also work with elephants in captivity and zoos. That's another one of our large campaigns. So IDA is just really, you know, we work on a lot, and we're very busy, but very dedicated.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, some people will say, well, you only care about animals, you don't care about people, and I'm sure you've heard that. The thing is, it's all connected. And
absolutely.
Once you allow for some sort of exploitation, it just snowballs, and then all kinds of violent activity just seems okay, and none of it's acceptable.
Right. Absolutely. No, it's true, and, you know, a lot of animal abuse is stemmed to people eventually abusing humans.
Mm-hmm.
When they're young and abuse animals. So, you know, it is all connected, and all violence against anyone is violence against everyone. We really, you know, have to acknowledge that. And also, you know, a lot of these issues, when we're helping the animals, we're also helping humans that are in their lives and around that community. It is all connected. You're absolutely right.
I want to talk a little bit about backyard hobby slaughtering of food animals in Oakland. I know that I read about that not too long ago, and it's really a very interesting subject. Certainly, animal agriculture, the factory farming of animals for food, is something that should be outlawed. And it's just probably one of the most horrific human creations ever.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
It just should be gone. But meanwhile, there are other ways to raise animals for food, and I personally think none of them are acceptable, but
There are different shades of horrible.
Right.
And, okay, so I put factory farming at the absolute worst. It's horrible ethically. It's horrible environmentally. And if you think that animal food is healthy, this is probably the worst of it. Okay.
Right.
So let's get rid of it. But meanwhile, some people's responses are that what if they're raising meat, dairy, eggs, quote, humanely, and some of these organic farms are popping up raising animals, but then there's also this raising chickens in your backyard.
Right.
And I read some articles about this specifically in Oakland, and that the legal challenge comes from people wanting to sell some of this food to other people.
Right.
And what issues are you working with IDA?
Yeah, Independence of Animals has been very active in this issue here in the Bay Area on numerous fronts. There is definitely a surge of, we call them kind of do-it-yourself hobby slaughterers.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it is. It's within the sustainable and locavore foodie movement.
Mm-hmm.
And people are wanting to, you know, get back to the earth, have urban gardens, which we are fully in support of. And so there's one aspect of it that we really embrace.
Mm-hmm.
And that is getting more fruits and vegetables growing in the local community, getting more fruits and vegetables to food deserts and areas that don't have access to healthy foods. But unfortunately, what is coming within that is people wanting to raise and slaughter rabbits, goats, chickens, and, you know, it's just so difficult to regulate. It's so difficult to know and be sure that these animals are having a good life, and eventually they are going to be slaughtered. I mean, that is kind of the bottom line, you know, that we don't want to see that happen, especially in someone's backyard where children can be witness to this brutality. It's, you know, there's numerous issues going on. And in Oakland, what's typically happening is that there is a group that's wanting to change the city ordinances to make it legal to slaughter, to be able to slaughter in the urban area and in your backyard. And because right now it's illegal.
Yes.
So, so we are working with a local group trying to, you know, the local Oakland homeowners that do not want to see this happen, that are, you know, we're going to the Planning Commission meetings, we are writing letters, we are have a petition going, trying to get this to not happen.
And what are you using as points to not, the reasons for not having this be allowed?
Right. Oh, there's so many reasons.
Because I know for a lot of people, you know, they don't care about killing, so that's not an issue.
Right, right. Well, here, if you're thinking environmentally, really they are shooting themselves in the foot as far as the amount of food that they can get on a local level. So, for instance, Oakland, they did an assessment of all the available arable land that you could grow fruits and vegetables on and how many people they could feed with the available land. So 30% of Oakland residents could be fed on fruits and vegetables if they used all that land to grow fruits and vegetables. However, if they start raising animals for that same amount of land, even half the animals, it goes down substantially to almost less than 10% of people being able to be fed on local food. So, you know, if you really, really want a local economy with local production, you need to focus on fruits and vegetables, especially in an urban environment, because there's so little land available.
Well, you know what, Hope? I'm not surprised with those numbers.
Yeah.
We've been talking for a long time about how inefficient growing plants to feed animals to feed people is.
Right, right. Absolutely.
And there are so
many
people that dance around it and try and come up with different reasons why it's good to raise animals
for example, having a cow or two in your yard or your farm is good because they trample the soil and they make up and we need their manure. And I read these articles and I go, okay, if that's even true, you can have the cow. You don't have to kill it.
Right. But you don't even have to have it to begin with. Veganic gardening is becoming really, really popular. There are numerous veganic farms, and veganic farming means farming without any animals.
That's right.
You don't need their manure, their products of any kind. You can do it all without animals. It is absolutely easy and doable. And there are, you know, veganic farms popping up everywhere. There's a veganic farm that has a CSA and is feeding their local community through boxes of produce. So, you know, it's unnecessary to have animals.
Gosh, I would really like to belong to that one.
Yeah.
The interesting Absolutely. Thing about veganic farming is that the expertise was developed, I believe, in Europe where they didn't have access to animals, and so they had to grow crops without animal manure, and it wasn't an ethical thing or anything. And fortunately, that knowledge has been transferred to people that want to do it without animals. And,
right,
you know,
right.
I think
it's practical.
It's important now because of all this E. coli and all of this filth that to put factory-farmed animal manure on organic farms is dangerous.
Absolutely. And, you know, and all of the issues that we have with E. coli and salmonella and all these terrible viruses and diseases, this all stems from animal agriculture.
Yep.
Not the spinach, it's the manure they put on the spinach.
Yeah, all those innocent vegetables,
right,
and bean sprouts that we're warned not to eat, and it's so important to eat them. And,
exactly.
And it's so unfair because here we are, you and I, we are not the cause of this problem, and yet it's affecting the food that we're eating.
Right.
I don't
Absolutely.
Like it.
No.
I don't like it. So how is it turning out, this how do you think it's going to turn out in Oakland?
What's happening in Oakland? Well, it is definitely a fight. They are very adamant. There's a couple of, you know, these do-it-yourselfers, farmers, that very much want to sell their product,
mm-hmm.
Both the vegetables and the meat. And that they're in it to make some money, and they feel that the local meat is going to be a moneymaker. So they're really pushing for it, and we're having to, you know, kind of fight tooth and nail here about it. The Planning Commission meetings are very dominated by their agenda, and so we're having to, you know, really be vocal about it. But you know, we have a lot of different points that we are trying to make. Violence actually in Oakland is out of control, and that's one of the worst per capita for, you know, drive-by shootings and stuff like that. And so we're trying to express that this is just going to bring more violence into the community. You know, another thing is that the animal control is really overburdened. They just lost something like $200,000, or I can't really say what it was, but, you know, their funding is being cut,
mm-hmm.
and this would just really overburden them even more when people get their, you know, they get their little chickens, and then, the, you know, they realize how much work it is, and they don't want to deal with it, or the chickens stop laying eggs. What are they going to do? They're going to give them to animal control. So, you know, then animal control is going to be overburdened dealing with trying to find them homes or just euthanizing them.
Yep.
So there's a lot of issues.
It is a big issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just going to mention another area that we're working on, too, that is similar, is the farmers markets here in the Bay Area. We're selling live birds for people to buy and take home and slaughter. So that had been going on for a little while, and In Defense of Animals, as well as another group called LBGT Compassion here in the Bay Area, a local group, have been working together to get these live bird sales stopped at the farmers markets. And we've been successful in San Francisco. Three of the farmers markets that were selling the live birds have stopped selling the live birds due to our protests and our being very vocal at city council meetings and other ways that we've been getting the word out about it. And now the only one left is in Richmond. So there's just the Richmond Farmers Market is still selling live birds. So we're having weekly demonstrations there every Friday with during their selling. And we're keeping on Richmond, and we're hoping very much that we will get them to stop as well, and then all of the farmers markets will have stop selling live birds. So we're having a more of a victory or positive outcomes with farmers markets.
It's really complex because sometimes people say if people had to kill the animals themselves, they'd become vegetarian. Or if people could see animals being slaughtered, they wouldn't eat them. And here's a case where we know that that's not true because there are people that are willing to slaughter their own animals.
And then
on the other hand, I think maybe it would be better if people had to slaughter their own animals. Maybe, I don't know. I just think it's really important to know, to be fully aware of what you're doing.
Absolutely. Well, there's a desensitization that happens, I think, when people are able to slaughter their own. Mark Zuckerman said, you know, the first one is really difficult, but then it gets easier and easier.
You get number and number, and once you're used to slicing a chicken's neck, it might be that much easier to slice anyone's neck if you move to in a moment.
Right, right. And so it's really, I think, a dangerous game that we're playing with this, getting this everyone to be able to slaughter their own. But another factor is that, you know, when these chickens get sold, like at the farmers markets, for instance, we have no way of regulating, no way of knowing what's going to happen to that bird. Some of them are used in ritual, like religious ceremonies where they're tortured and slaughtered. They just bring them home and ignore them and let them starve, you know, before they slaughter them. Or it could be a botched slaughter where they don't know what they're doing. They don't do it very well, and the animal could suffer greatly while it's dying. So, you know, there's just so many unknowns without having it being in a facility where there's regulation. I mean, granted, there's not a lot of regulation around the slaughterhouses and factory farms. However, at least there is some oversight. It's such an unknown with these take-home and do-it-yourself things.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to marinate on this thought for a while, and we're going to take a quick break. And we'll be back in a moment. Hope stay with us, and we have a lot more to talk about.
News or upcoming events, follow us at Twitter at PRN_radio or click the Twitter icon on our homepage. You can also friend us on Facebook. Just search Progressive Radio Network. Always new and up to date. The Progressive Radio Network, your home for thoughtful and informative information.
Every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, I'll be revealing secrets, deceptions, and hoaxes of the medical cartel. I've been covering this waterfront for 30 years as a reporter, and I know where the bodies are buried. With guests and commentary, I'll rip open the lid on vaccines, psychiatric drugs, the FDA, pharmaceutical companies, germ research, and media cover-ups. Don't check your brain at the door. Tune it up. Every Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern on PRN, The John Rappaport Show.
Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. We're proud to announce that the Progressive Radio Network will be bringing you our live call-in talk show, Prescriptions for Health, every Monday afternoon starting June the 6th from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Mark your calendars and save up your questions so you can ask us about possible strategies for your health problems, whether mainstream or complementary and alternative.
We also invite your questions and comments about any area of health care, including politics, economics, ethics, philosophy, and styles of health care.
So remember to tune in every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to the Progressive Radio Network's Prescriptions for Health show.
The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, Mondays, 1 to 2 p.m., hosted by medical school professors and best-selling authors. Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, and Dr. Eugene Zamfiro empowers you with knowledge you can use about herbs, homeopathics, and natural therapies for you and your family. Tune in Mondays, 1 to 2 p.m. Visit the archives anytime. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, the Natural Nurse, and Dr. Z.
Steve Barnett. I'm your host for the Paradise Parking Lot, a show about environmental matters. We are on the air every Tuesday at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. This is a program for both the curious and the savvy about environmental matters. We discuss things in depth, and we present points of view that you probably have not heard before. Our programs are archived on Progressive Radio Network, so you can listen to any of the previous programs. Again, it's the Paradise Parking Lot. I'm Steve Barnett, and it is the most in-depth, sophisticated environmental show you will ever come across.
Progressive Radio Network, celebrating 5 years of independent news.
Hardglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food, and I'm here with Hope Bohanic, and we're talking about a lot of animal issues. She's with In Defense of Animals. Hope, you're still here with us. Great.
I am.
Okay, so let's move on to some other fun things that In Defense of Animals is doing. Maybe more fun than some of the other things, because some things can really be difficult, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, just working and talking about slaughtering all the time, I imagine, can really weigh on you.
Well, it is difficult, and sometimes we all, you know, have to process, and here at the office we'll have to run to the bathroom and cry for a minute.
You know? No, absolutely.
It's tough to be exposed to all this 24/7, but it is also empowering knowing that we are helping, in lots of ways, and helping these animals as best we can. So it makes it a little more tolerable. But we do have some fun things coming up. In October, we have World Go Vegan Week, and that's the last week of October, and we really try to make this a positive celebration of the vegan diet and vegan food. And one thing we're going to be doing for World Go Vegan Week is we're going to have a campaign that's called Vegan Pizza Takes Over the World. And we're partnering with Daya Cheese, which is a new vegan cheese that is really amazing. They finally are getting these formulas really, really good. And Daya Cheese is delicious. It tastes very similar to cheese. It melts. Well, I haven't had cheese for 20 years, so I'm not really sure. It tastes just like cheese to me. And it melts. It's great. So we're partnering with Daya Cheese. We're going to be reaching out our members. We're going to encourage our IDA members around the country and around the world to go into their pizza shops that don't have a vegan option right now and encouraging them if they would offer a vegan pizza for the week of World Go Vegan Week.
Great.
And we're going to have Daya Cheese provide them with a sample packet of cheese so that they can make one of their pizzas with Daya Cheese and give it a try. If they like it and want to offer it that week, then we will, you know, encourage the vegan community of that area to go in, give it a try, support that pizza shop, and hopefully they will keep it on their menu beyond World Go Vegan Week. So we're trying to get more vegan pizza options in vegan pizza shops all around the world, and and we just feel like that's, you know, going to make it even more fun and easy to be vegan.
Well, you know, pizza is a very popular food, and a lot of kids like it, and it can be a nightmare health disaster, health and environmental disaster, or it can be somewhat nutritious and certainly planet-friendly.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't take too much change. So, tomato sauce is a really healthy food. White flour I'm not a big fan of, but that's okay. Especially if we don't eat it all the time, it's fine.
Right. This is a special treat kind of food. Yeah,
I mean, part of the problem related to pizza and other fast foods is that people are eating it all the time, and you know, we got to get to those leafy green vegetables.
Absolutely. Well, maybe they could encourage them to also have a whole wheat crust.
Whole wheat, or gluten-free. You know, there's a lot of but I think what's important here, and I'm totally in support of what you're doing, because what I think is important is that any pizza establishment, they should lift their own veils and know that there are lots of different alternatives out there that they can be offering, and it won't be a loss for them. In fact, I think it will only improve their business, because there are lots of different communities out there, not just vegan communities, but people that are lactose intolerant. And, you know, they should be offering different kinds of pizza, whole grain pizzas and gluten-free pizzas and
absolutely
a whole variety. So this is important that
it's just going to bring them more business and a wider community to serve. Absolutely. So we're very excited about that.
I want to say we like to make pizza at home, and I tend to stay away from gluten, and we've been using garbanzo flour quite a bit. In fact, I welcome people to go to my new nonprofit website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. I just put up a recipe for soca, which is a it's like a crepe made from chickpea flour. And
ooh, that sounds good.
It's so good, and it's so simple, and it's so easy, and I don't know why more pizza places aren't making some crusts out of chickpea flour, because it's so much easier, and it's gluten-free. I like to use that, and there are all kinds of wonderful cheese alternatives. We like to make a lot of nut cheeses at home, cashew-based and almond-based. And I think these products are going to start exploding soon.
Absolutely. And they seem to be getting healthier and healthier. The ingredients are really good.
I mean,
comparatively to some other cheese substitutes. So I'm very happy that, you know, not only are we getting more vegan products, but they seem to be getting healthier too.
Right. Good point. Yeah.
And another little project I have that I'd love to plug, just because we are going to need funding for it, and so I'm just kind of putting it out there, something that I have visioned for the future and want to do for next summer. I would really love to get a vegan ice cream truck going here in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Oh, what a great idea.
I think it would be
that
so
idea.
Much fun. Yeah, so much fun. So we'd be at all different events.
I mean, why not?
Rock concerts to, farmers markets and other festivals. And it's just, you know, when people, we do sometimes vegan ice cream tastings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's truly, truly amazing the reactions we get from people. People will start off being like, oh, no, you know, it's vegan ice cream? No, thank you, no. And we're like, no, just try it. I mean, just have one bite. Just see what it's like. And they'll eat it and be amazed at how good it is and how similar it is to ice cream. And, you know, and people will be like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to get this all the time. I had no idea. You know, so it really is showing people how delicious vegan can be.
That's right. And there are so many more choices, and you can go from super, super healthy and still delicious to others that have more fat and sugar.
A little more decadence, yes.
So, you know, you can, I mean, why can't an ice cream truck serve up like a strawberry banana treat?
Sure,
that's just
sure.
made
I
from strawberries and bananas.
Frozen fruits through a Champion juicer, it's just amazing. It's all you need is the frozen fruit.
Right,
it tastes
and
so
it's so
good.
Delicious.
Absolutely. I was thinking about that. I think that would be a great addition to the truck.
But no, really. And then there's coconut milk-based ice creams and soy milk-based and almond milk. And
almond
so many,
and hemp
and
milk.
And cashew milk-based.
Yeah,
mean, it's just,
everything.
And each one imparts a slightly different flavor. It just expands on the possibilities.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yay.
So that's really exciting. We're excited about that, but we are going to need some funding to be able to buy the truck and the initial stock of ice cream. So, that anybody is interested in that idea.
it's an interesting concept, and there are a few people taking their businesses mobile, and it's a great thing, although I've read some pros and cons, you know, how environmentally is it good to be using a business that requires gas to move around. But there have been some people that have started these mobile produce trucks, bringing produce to food desert areas, people that don't have access to healthy food in stores.
Right.
And you know what? The ice cream truck, I have so many wonderful memories as a kid when the music played and you ran to the truck and you nagged to your parents, you know, please.
Yeah, so true. So, you know, we can start those new positive memories with a vegan community, with a vegan lifestyle. We don't have to lose any of that. It can all be healthy and happy for the animals, and we can still have those happy memories. Yeah,
it's just amazing, and that's why I love talking about it, because people have to know this is not a diet of deprivation. We have
everything,
and we have more than everything.
Absolutely, and I've had numerous people tell me that, you know, they eat so much, they have such a more variety of food now that they're vegan than they ever did before.
Yeah. That's really good. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, me too. Hope it happens.
Okay, so we talked a little bit before about the impact of animal agriculture on global warming, and I'm sure that's one of the big points that you talk about in your eco-eating presentation.
Yes.
Are there other issues that are also as compelling to the environment?
Absolutely, yes. There are so many different issues as far as water waste, water pollution. It's interesting. It's been said that a vegan can leave their shower running for a year and still not waste as much water as a meat eater. So
yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to talk about that earlier when we were talking about people not giving anything up for their hamburger.
Yeah, no, it's true. There's so much resources wasted, not only water, but the grain that's fed to the animal that could be going directly to feed people, and that's, you know, bringing in the world hunger issue, as well as the land use. There's just so much waste with the animals, because, you know, we often think of ourselves as the overpopulated species eating up all the resources, and while that is arguably true, we need to look at the billions of animals that are raised for our food consumption that are really overpopulated, eating up all the resources. I mean, there's where the problem is, and it's so unnecessary. It's a middleman we don't need. We can get food nutritious, actually better and higher and superior nutrition from the plants directly.
You had mentioned that In Defense of Animals had started originally with vivisection being the focus of their campaigns. And vivisection, of course, is the testing of animals to verify that products are healthy or safe for humans, and also to develop medical practices as well.
And there's a lot of laws right now where companies are required to do animal testing. And so most of the time I say that in order to make change, the individuals have to change and then the laws will follow. And the only way to change these laws is if people don't buy the products that use animal testing. And it's really hard to know sometimes what those products are. Certainly, gosh, it must have been more than 20 years ago now when the Body Shop put it in the forefront talking about animal testing on makeup. And, you know, people were aware of it. I think people get confused when they read a statement that says no animal testing because they still don't realize there's levels of cruelty involved. Even if a product says it doesn't have animal testing, it still could have dead exploited animals in its product.
Animal ingredients, sure.
So where are we with vivisection these days? Has there been any improvement?
Well, there's always improvement. There's a lot more products available that are not animal tested. That's, you know, absolutely happening. As far as...
Or is it something that IDA isn't as focused on as it used to be?
Well, we are. We have a whole vivisection campaign. It's just not something I am focusing on personally,
That's okay.
I don't know a lot of details. But
I know for medical testing that fortunately there's a lot of things that are happening now where people are moving from testing on animals to testing in vitro in petri dishes and using computer models, and all of that is a great improvement.
Right. Well, see, and all that takes infrastructure change, though. I mean, I know that that's the reason why a lot of the older companies like Procter & Gamble, you know, are still testing on animals, because you have, they have to invest, you know, millions of dollars to update their labs. Their labs are all set up right now for testing. So they'd have to, you know, spend a lot of money to upgrade to the computer modulation and petri dish and all of that. So that's a lot of what's going on, is that they just, you know, are not willing to spend the money for the infrastructure change. But you mentioned in vitro, and I think something that, you know, if we're talking about science, the future, in vitro meat is something that I find interesting.
How do you, feel about that, laboratory meat?
Well, I think that it's an interesting thought. I think that it is something that could be in, you know, in a continuum. I mean, we're going to have more and more people going vegan and eating healthy vegans. And there's going to be a core of diehards that just don't care enough, whether it be about their health or about the environment or about the animals. They just don't care. They just want their, you know, their easy fast food food and don't think about it enough, you know, or too much. So I think that in vitro meat could be a wonderful solution for those people that just aren't going to make the change, you know, and it can be done. Actually, there was an Oxford study that just came out recently that found that in vitro meat would actually use, I think it was 98% less greenhouse gas emissions than animal agriculture, and something 70-something percent less water use, and, you know, just the numbers just drastically reduced on the environmental impact.
That's good.
So, yeah, really fascinating stuff. I mean, you know, like we maybe this is some place where technology can redeem itself and really help, you know, save some animals and feed the world. So we'll see.
Yeah, it definitely is interesting. It's funny to me because sometimes when you talk about, ask people would they like to eat laboratory meat, and their instant reaction is, oh, I couldn't do that. And if they really realize what's going on with the food that they're eating to begin with, because people have no clue. I mean, if they saw how a hot dog was made, it's just disgusting. And, and all the chemicals and artificial ingredients, it's just mind-boggling. And so that's always very amusing to me. But for the people that don't care, it's definitely a better alternative.
You
know, I would go for soy-based chicken nuggets rather than chicken. And I don't
myself as well, but I think that there's those people out there that still are going to be like, that's not meat. You know, it's not
that's not
really
natural.
Meat. Right. Right. But, yeah. But you know, if we made it so that in vitro meat was just like it, you couldn't tell the difference, you know, I think it could be a huge solution.
Yeah. Well, for me, the most important thing is to reduce and eliminate pain and suffering and exploitation. So anything that does that is great. But part of the pain and suffering is the pain and suffering in humans when they get sick. And, mm-hmm. you know, I work a lot towards educating people about what's healthy. And I can't say enough about fresh, locally grown, organic fruits and vegetables, lots of dark leafy greens. You know, we don't need heart disease. Heart disease, for the most part, is reversible, preventable. Diabetes, preventable.
Right.
60% at least of cancers are preventable.
Absolutely.
And hospitals are not a fun place. Pain is not fun.
Yeah,
and
no.
The fruits and vegetables are really where it's at when it comes to boosting our immune system and the best protection towards prevention of illness and strengthening our bodies to live quality lives.
Yeah, and it's really a positive, I think, a really positive thing that's going on as far as the health community really coming out behind plant-based diets, fruits and vegetables, with the new plate, you know, the government dietary standard plate. I am so excited about that because if you notice, it's subtle, but if you notice the four sections, they say fruits, vegetables, grains, which
mm-hmm.
are all actual foods. Those are the actual foods. So they want you to eat fruits, vegetables, grains. And then the fourth section is protein.
Yes.
Okay, that's a nutrient.
Yes.
So what they're basically saying is we don't care how you get your protein, just get some protein. So that could be beans, that could be meat, whatever. But the other ones, I mean, they could have said, you know, vitamins and carbohydrates, but they didn't. They were very specific about fruits, vegetables, grains,
mm-hmm.
and then the protein. It's like meat is now optional. Meat is not a necessity on the plate, and I think that that's just so positive.
I'm glad you bring that up because I didn't see it that way, and I like that perspective very much. I like consistency, and so it bothered me that one corner was a macronutrient and the rest were foods. It didn't make sense to me, but this is really a good take on it. What was amusing to me was it looks exactly like the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine plate that they put out a year
ago. And I'm sure they took a lot from that, which is really wonderful.
The little circle to the side of the plate of the milk.
I know, there's that was disappointing, definitely. I wonder how much the dairy industry paid to get that little circle.
Exactly. Yeah, it's all about money.
Yeah.
Well, Hope, guess what? We've come to the end of the hour.
Wow.
We did it.
Quick.
And I enjoyed myself. I hope you did, too. And,
I did. Thank you so much.
Such a pleasure talking to you, and I love the work that you're doing. If people
Great.
Are interested,
if I could give our website,
mm-hmm.
It's idausa.org, and you can look on our vegan campaign and get a lot of further information about what I was talking about. And please support us in defense of animals.
Thank you so much, Hope Hennick, for you and all that you're doing, and for In Defense of Animals, idausa.org. I'm Karen Hartglass, and please check out my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. And that's all. Have a delicious week.